This is Betatron, Investing in Asia, a podcast for people who want to invest in Asia's future. We're talking about Asia outside of China, where 44% of the world's population lives. They are young, they're digital natives, and their buying power is increasing by the day. I'm your host, Arshad Chowdhury, a partner with Betatron Venture Group, based in Hong Kong. In this episode, we look at Asia's massive maritime industry. 9 out of 10 of the world's largest ports are in Asia, where demand for products in and out of China has increased significantly since peak pandemic. And globally, the industry is looking to become more sustainable and efficient. Our guest is Suyin Anand, head of shipping at South 32, a publicly traded, globally diversified mining and metals company doing business in Australia, South Africa, and South America. She's also co-founder of the Captain's Table Innovation Challenge, where maritime startups compete for funding. I've gotten to know Suyin through a partnership between Betatron and YPSN. That's the Young Professionals in Shipping Network, another industry organization Suyin co-founded. We work together to find and fund the next great maritime startups. So thank you for joining us today, Suyin. Let's jump right in.
Sure.
Suyin, maritime shipping is a massive industry, maybe the biggest industry many of us have never stopped to think about until the Suez Canal gets blocked or something. So for those of us who are unfamiliar with it, can you give us a high-level introduction to the industry?
Sure, Arsha. I think what you said is right. It is a big industry. And unfortunately, a lot of people don't hear about us or even think about us until something goes wrong. So in a way, I'm glad that the incident at Suez Canal happened last week. So at least now people are starting to talk about the maritime industry and understanding the importance that the role of maritime plays in international trade. Now, I said you hit the nail on the head when you said it's a big industry because it is a big industry. What is the maritime industry? If I start at a very high level, the maritime industry is split at a macro level into government and commercial. So you've got government maritime, which include your navies, your aircraft carriers, so on and so forth. And that in and of itself is a huge industry and huge revenue generating industry in and of itself. But I think today what we're more concerned about is the commercial maritime industry. What is the commercial maritime industry? At the very basic level, we've got the different types of ships out there. I was just off a seminar before we started today's recording on the container industry. So that's one. We've got the dry bulk segment. We've got the tanker industry. We've got the product tanker industry. And then we go offshore. We've got oil rigs and we've got FLNGs. And then we go into the fishing industry where we've got commercial fisheries. Then we go into the cruise ships industry where we've got luxury cruise ships and cruise ships. And let's not forget the people that enjoy leisure sailing, where you've got personal yachts. Aside from that, all these ships and all the owners and charterers of these ships need to be supported by a maritime services industry that range from maritime insurance to law, just to name a few, ship management. So the maritime industry is huge. If we just look at number of vessels, in 2020, there were more than 56,000 commercial shipping vessels. I believe more than 1,000 offshore oil rigs. And believe this or not, more than 4 million commercial fishery vessels. So in terms of the hard asset, those are the numbers that we're looking at. Quite mind-blowing if you ask me, right? But that's the maritime industry.
None of those sound like the typical landscape in which a lot of startups are operating in, right? Servicing dry bulk shipping does not seem like the same thing as putting an app on the app store. So help me understand, what is the role of startups and new companies in the shipping industry? What are some examples of disruption or innovation from successful startups that you can think?
Well, I was hoping you would ask me that question. I think it boils down to information. I think the maritime industry has reached a stage where information will be the key to unlocking a lot of value and will be the key to unlocking a company's competitive edge. The maritime information sector is valued in 2020 at $1 billion, and it's expected to grow at a CAGR of around 6.65% and estimated to be worth more than, well, do the math, I think it's estimated to be worth more than $1.5 billion in 2027. And I really think, like I said earlier, this is where it gets really interesting for startups in this space. Because when I think about the maritime industry, it's fragmented, it's huge. and there are so many different players in there. But the one thing they have in common is that it's at a stage now where they actually do need to rely on innovation in order to ensure the sustainability of the industry. And there are numerous reasons for this, right? It's consumer-driven. Consumers want transparency. It's driven by regulations on the ESG side. It's driven by a younger generation of ship owner. You know, no longer do we have the, dare I say it, the older Greek gentleman owner, you know, sitting in a bar having drinks. It's the next generation that's out now, the next generation who are used to having apps on their iPhones and used to having instantaneous information delivered to their fingertips. That's the landscape that we're dealing with now. So I do think startups have a role to play. If I take the second part of your question, where do I see startups having a role to play? Again, I go back to the very basics of the maritime industry, to the ships. And when I look at the ships, because that's a money generator at the end of the day, I believe that innovation falls into three main brackets: health and safety, productivity, and ESG-related innovation. Health and safety, why is that important? Well, because we need to be able to transport cargo on board the ships safely from point A to point B to ensure the safety of the ship, the crew, and the cargo. And under this bracket, this is where I see innovations in the areas of cybersecurity, crew training, automation, vessel-to-vessel communications being quite interesting and having a role to play. Turning now to the second bracket of productivity, here we're talking about general operational efficiencies, but also insight and analytics. Areas that have been a focus, actually, and we've seen quite a number of startups in this area, include cargo flow analytics, port congestion analytics, vessel performance analytics, and interestingly, just-in-time orders for supplies and spares, so owners do not have to order in advance and store it up and risk supplies going bad or spares becoming obsolete. Upskilling of staff, linked very closely to automation, which I mentioned under health and safety, talent development, as well as vessel quality assessments. And in the last bracket, ESG, we've talked about it a lot. The maritime industry is coming under increasing pressure to lower its carbon emissions footprints. There's a lot of regulation being thrown our way, something which perhaps the industry is not used to. So under this basket, I see, you know, helping owners understand regulations. So regulations database, not sexy, but necessary. Alternative fuels, actually material engineering. If a ship goes through a long voyage, what material can prevent bottom fouling? Is there more innovation that can take place in this area? Again, carbon emissions monitoring, reporting, and also enhanced transparency in pricing and in the way we work in order to reduce the instances of bribery and corruption. So a lot to take in there, but it's got all to do with data, data transparency, analyzing the data, and being proactive in terms of responding to regulations that will be thrown our way, all linked to building a sustainable maritime industry.
It sounds like there's a real diversity of opportunities. Are you seeing startups stepping up to meet those needs, or do you feel that there's still a gap, that there's a gap in innovation, a gap in the number of entrepreneurs operating in the space?
We do see, in the work that we do in the captain's table, we do see startups trying to problem solve. I see two fundamental problems here, which are to some extent preventing the gap from being narrowed. One, startups in this space are often founded by founders who have experience in the maritime industry. Now, it's good, right? You want a founder that knows the problem. However, the other side of that is that some founders may be so focused on the problem which they perceive to be a problem, they perhaps don't talk to enough end users to understand really whether this is a real problem for the maritime industry, how big that problem is, and how quickly, and therefore how quickly the product or the solution can scale. So it's a double-edged sword coming from the industry, but I do see this gap. Founders need to really start thinking about the problem and start talking to more players in the industry before they launch the product to really fine-tune their problem statement. I think secondly, the maritime industry, historically well-known to be slow adopters, if even they adopt, and also very distrustful of each other. So let's not even talk about startups, but of each other in the industry. And they view their data to, you know, be their data and their competitive edge. To give you an example, when I say a slow adopter, do you know when the container was first invented?
I have no idea.
So apparently a very, very basic version of the container made an appearance in the late 1800s. It was properly invented by a US company in the 1950s. Now, we see it all over the place now, right? Suez Canal incident, 20,000 TEU containers stuck there. Although it was properly invented and came on the market in the 1950s, it only got uptake in the 1970s. It took 20 years for the industry to get used to the idea of the container and for the idea to become commonplace. Why? You might ask that question. One, infrastructure. There was a lack of infrastructure at the ports to handle the containers because you need pretty huge cranes to lift the containers. So that was one issue. Secondly, you didn't have the right type of ships to transport and the cargo volume to justify the unit economics for using a container. It took 20 years. So now when we talk about technology, something that's not even, you know, perhaps tangible that owners can feel and touch, and then at the same time, you know, particularly platforms are saying, I want your data, but I'm also taking data from all your competitors. Now, how long will it take a historically distrustful industry to take that up? And secondly, when we talk about infrastructure, perhaps not so much hardware here, but are the people within the industry, so not the leaders, but the people working within companies, do we have the human resource infrastructure to actually use the data that's being churned out by all these startups, or could actually appreciate and then appreciate in action the benefits of the innovation that we're seeing in the industry? I have a huge question mark there, and I think it remains to be seen. But I do think that that is another limitation. And I think tied in quite closely to that is something which I've been thinking about, right? We always say, you're familiar with startups, right? And, you know, the startups say we are creating value. You know, there's a lot of value creation in the products and solutions which they are seeking to sell, which is great. And you would probably see it. But the creation of value in and of itself is not enough unless the end user can capture that value. So I think that there is another issue in the maritime industry now where we've got startups really trying to step up to the game, trying to create value within the industry. But the businesses, the ship owners, the maritime industry, we've not really come up with a way to understand or comprehend how we can actually capture that value and really translate that value into tangible either reductions in bottom line or growth in top line.
I appreciate the challenges, and I've seen it firsthand, especially around the ownership and protection around data. Although I have seen on the other side of that, some companies like, say, Flexport, which mm-hmm. have found unicorn status in a relatively short amount of time because they've gained traction in the industry. Mm-hmm. Do you see opportunity for more unicorns to emerge?
I think yes. But the question is in which part of the industry? Because like I said, it's a really fragmented industry, right? So to achieve unicorn status, you need to be able to scale and you need to be able to scale to a lot of users. So if we're talking about the maritime industry, given the fragmentation and given the needs of different players, I think in my mind, I've not answered the question where. But if there was to be an area where we actually see collaboration such that there'll be more uptake, I think it's going to be in the ESG space, particularly when it comes to alternative fuels. Because think about it, right? When I think about it, I think you develop an alternative fuel that works for a ship, it could be transferable to an adjacent industry. So you're not only looking at the maritime industry, but beyond the maritime industry in order to scale. And that will assist in obtaining unicorn status. Otherwise, I would say we probably have to look beyond just the maritime industry and look at the wider supply chain network, which would then include logistics, which is deserving of a whole different conversation in of itself, given how massive that industry is and the impact that really has on international trade. But yes, I think yes, the right solution at the right time, funded by the right people.
What kind of exits can startups expect? Can they expect to go public? Or is there a maritime equivalent of Facebook or Google, large companies who typically acquire companies?
So I think you raise a very interesting question. It's something which I discussed with an investor a couple of years ago. And I said, we need a Facebook, we need a Google, someone independent, if I can call them that, but who is acquiring all this technology to provide to the industry. Then maybe that deals with the issue of distrust that exists in an industry. Do I see a company like that yet? Well, I don't see any independent company trying to do it, but you do have big players in various segments that are, you know, either supporting startups through working with them or actively investing with them and eventually acquiring them. For example, Inmarsat in the satellite space, space. I think they are doing quite a lot of work there. The other area where I see this happening is actually in the corporate venture capital space. So companies like Eastern Pacific with their tie-up with Techstars for the EPS Techstar program. You have Antler, which is linked to Oldendorf. And you've got, I believe it's MOL coming out with the CVC recently. Now, these companies, particularly the EPS Techstar model, is interesting because it's backed by a shipping company together with an accelerator. And they are also actively investing in startups in the maritime space. So they could potentially build up a pretty neat portfolio. But the question I have is there a conflict of interest between these CVCs and commercialization? Because to commercialize, it would mean that you have to share the competitive advantages you're gaining from these startups with the wider industry. Of course, there's network externalities that might work there, which can help the product scale, but it remains to be seen how these CVCs would play this. So that's where I see. I think it would be very interesting if a independent, maybe maritime and logistics-focused VC might enter this space and build up a portfolio in this space. Then they might eventually transform into a smaller version of a Google or Facebook. But yeah, I think it's happening slowly, as always in this industry, but at a faster pace than we've seen before. Exits. I think IPO is always an option. However, I think what is probably more likely is that startups will be bought up by some of the bigger players who are looking to leverage their economies of scale to deliver the product at a more, I guess, palatable price point, and also to leverage upon their existing offerings to sell products to their customers. And I always say, right, IPOs very, very sexy, but it comes with a lot of obligations as well, particularly reporting obligations. So founders need to think very carefully about whether or not IPO is an exit strategy and discuss that carefully with their investors as well.
Thinking from the perspective of an investor who wants to get exposure to deal flow in the maritime space, are there certain cities or countries that lead in terms of innovation in shipping?
Yes, definitely. You and I are respectively located in one of them. Singapore and Hong Kong are doing very well this part of the world in leading the maritime innovation growth. In Europe, we've got Hamburg. There's a lot going on in Hamburg, and there's actually a very active startup scene there. And I also think then when we go to Denmark and Norway, there's a lot happening up in Scandinavia. And in Norway and Denmark, I think what's really interesting is the sustainability-linked solutions that are coming out of there. So yes, definitely. I think these cities, actually not countries, but these cities are actively leading the way in maritime innovation. We also do see players in New York trying to join in the game. And it's been quite interesting. But yes, it's strong and people are trying to make it work.
What are some ways in which investors can actually discover deal flow? Are there specific entities, organizations that they can plug into to see deals?
Well, yes, I think, you know, Betatron with its involvement in the maritime vertical, I think that's one very good partner to talk to in order to get access to deals. And like I said, there are also other outfits out there, for example, Rainmaking or EPS Techstars or Antler that actively look at the maritime industry. So I would say start talking to people. Start talking to people involved in these companies and these outfits, even the captain table. A captain's table with Tabitha and ID, come talk to us and we can then put you in touch with the right people who have access to deal flows. Alternatively, you know, the usual suspects like a Crunchbase and TechCrunch do have a pretty good list of maritime startups as well. So for people just looking at the industry, that might be a very good starting point to look at before you reach out to the accelerators.
I've heard about some of the challenges in the industry around labor rights, specifically in fishing and in the cruise industry. Is that transforming as well? Do you see opportunity?
I do. So I think if I start off with the cruise industry, right? So labor rights, I think COVID really shone light on it and it's getting quite a lot of press now. And activist shareholders, you know, putting pressure on maritime companies, which they've invested in, also driving the change in that regard. So there's a lot of conversation going on. And I really hope that the good work that's been done over the last year in relation to crew wellness will carry on beyond COVID and that the conversations will continue. But, you know, COVID was a catalyst. It's there to stay. Fisheries, well, that's a bit of a political landmine. I think for as long as there is demand for seafood, people will have to find their way to get it. But I do think that the documentaries recently on fisheries might make people and consumers more conscious about how food gets onto their table. And I think in that industry, it will be the consumers who need to demand for change, because any change in that industry will come at an increased cost. And for all service providers, the question is, who's going to pick up the tab for it?
Yeah, it's a really good point. I just saw with my wife this weekend, Seaspiracy, something I recommend everyone check out. It was really well done and really opened my eyes.
Yeah.
What started with just trying to figure out why there's so much plastic on beaches and pull the thread. And before you know it, you're looking at a global crime syndicate with slave labor on ships.
Yeah.
So it was very, very interesting. Highly recommended.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's all tied, right? You know, the maritime industry, the commercial shipping industry provides about 1 million jobs. And part of it will be as highly paid executives and shore workers, but a lot of them are actually crew, seafarers. And when you think about it, what would cause a person to take a job which requires him or her to spend 10 months away from family on board a ship with maybe 11 other people? It's probably not because they want to. I think some people relish the opportunity to travel, but it's probably because their economic circumstances leave them with no choice but to take a job that pays relatively okay, right? So I think what you said earlier, pull the thread and you unlock a crime syndicate, the world just needs to change and we need to rectify the wealth gap. And I think maritime has a role to play that given the number of jobs we create for the world.
So Ian, this has been a really wonderful and informative session. Before we go, I would love to hear from you. What are you most excited about in the next few years in the shipping industry?
What am I most, well, That's a difficult question. Firstly, I would like to say that, leave aside innovation, I'm really, really excited by the diversity that I'm seeing in the industry at the moment. Being female, I think I just have to touch on it, you know, a bit. I am seeing a lot more females enter the industry, particularly at the management level. I mentioned my co-founder of the Captain's Table earlier, Tabitha. Her company now has 4 females at the management level, which I think is outstanding. And this diversity that's coming in will help drive change within the industry. So I'm quite excited about that. I think secondly, it sounds a bit cliche, but I am quite excited about the carbon emission strategies that will start coming out. I think the industry is quite a massive contributor to carbon emissions. But now, finally, there does seem to be a push from all ends, including ship owners and charterers, to do something about this. So I think this is quite interesting because it spans from everything, right? From vessel performance to alternative fuels, to the way you work, to the way you charter. So I'm quite excited about that. We are at a watershed moment in the maritime industry now, I think.
Well, thank you very much for the wide-ranging, really interesting and informative conversation, Suyin.
My pleasure, Arshad. Thanks for inviting me.